David, welcome. Reeves, known also to thousands as Uncle Fuzzy from time to time.
That's not true.
Uncle Fuzzy from time to time.
Only known to a select, prior to this point, only known to a select few as Uncle
Fuzzy. Oh, well,
Mariah Carey of guitar.
We were with the Bent Men the other day, and actually it got on the air last week that it was Uncle Fuzzy.
Maria Callas.
Thought I'd bring that up.
Maria Callas of guitar.
So, David, welcome back to Boston.
Thank you very much.
You've been here many times before, yes. And I'm wondering if there's any thing special that's ever happened to you here, if there's any remembrances of Boston that makes it unique amongst the whole...
I've never had a cup of tea here. That's the only thing that I've never done. I've done just about everything that one can do in Boston.
It was that Boston Tea Party we had. Yeah. I was wondering. Now, you were here just not too very long ago when we had an in studio thing at Fort Apache. Unfortunately, I was out of the country myself that day. And now you're back to do a regular tour. You have two nights, and tomorrow you're doing something which will, I guess, put Boston on the map in your mind. You're doing an entire cybercast of your concert.
Yeah.
How will that work? What will it sound like? What does it entail?
We have to do nothing. We just stand there and play. And anybody who has an internet setup will be able to receive our show. And I think like a photograph every... How many seconds is it now these days?
It's almost 22 frame.
Is it?
I think, yeah, now. So it's just...
So if you blink a lot, you can kid yourself it's movement.
Yeah, it's a little staccato frames,
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Well, film is 24 frames a second, so it's really not going to be that jump time thing that you're used to on the internet.
Well, we'll see that.
We'll
find out.
Well, actually, it is
exciting because it's the first time we've done anything like that.
Well, we'll be playing. We'll never know.
Well, I might stop the show occasionally and sort of just do stuff just for the internet, you know?
Will it sound?
Go into the crowd, take the microphone if anybody has any problems with the internet.
There you go.
Maybe do some technical advice kind of portion of the show. Might be really enthralling.
Will the sound come down in real time?
Yes, it will.
Yeah. So yeah. It sounds as good.
And then it's being rebroadcasted again, I think, later in the week.
Right. You did that with a single one time? You had one of your singles?
Yeah, we put about two or three different mixes of one of our first drum and bass pieces called Telling Lies.
Right.
We did that, I can't even remember when. That it was, you know, it was so
two
long
years ago.
There was still steam driven there.
Yeah, really?
You know,
a coal-fired computer, was it?
Steam driven computer. Wow. Do you know that there was the English guy developed a wind-up radio for remote parts of Africa, which I thought was quite brilliant.
Really?
You wound it up for 25, 30 seconds, and it would last about 2 or 3 hours. So villages that had never been able to get broadcast before were able to get broadcast and keep in touch with the outside world. He's now applied the same idea to computers, so you can now get a wind-up computer. Just have to have one of those.
Do you stay online yourself? Or do you ever... get online and chat with people, unbeknownst to them.
Drinking, you know.
David is, in fact, wet-wired.
Wet-wired. I see.
Reeves, as you know, is hot-wired.
Before the cybercast tomorrow, worldwide, will there be any, you know, preliminary chatting?
I'm doing a chat, yes.
Yeah. And now, how will that go? Will you actually, you know, people...
Yes, whatever, you know, in the 10,000 questions that come in, we'll take the first three.
Right.
And then people... those ludicrous situations where you pretend to be democratic about it.
People will chat amongst themselves after that.
Yes, they do. Yes, especially whilst we're playing, apparently.
Have you ever read or seen anything about yourself on the net that wasn't particularly true, and
the things that Reeves puts on it.
Oh, I see.
Yeah,
I see.
Or my mother.
Yeah.
Yes, or his mother. His mother is an avid player.
I see.
Net.
So there'll be an ongoing commentary while we're playing.
From your mother?
No, I'm asking. This is something that I'm... So is it going to be sort of like a Marv Albert kind of like play-by-play?
Whoa. Is Marv's name brought up?
We're going to go topical, are we, yeah? All right, how do we do a CC earthquake?
Yeah.
Get into it?
I notice you guys have guitars in your hand.
Well, yeah. I won't even buy Giotto. Yeah, yeah. I've been trying to say that this morning.
Yeah. And perhaps you could regale us with a song.
Oh. Yes, we'd love to.
Wow, speechless.
In Gaza.
That's Eyeless.
That was my joke, Reeves.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, where does the original reference come from? Seeing as how you're so clever.
I thought it was Camus, but I'm, you know.
Well, yes, I know, but where did he get it from? No, your Bible.
The Playboy Channel.
Nope. No, it was the Blinding of Samson, wasn't it?
Ah, yes.
And it was released into Gaza. Iris in Gaza.
There you go.
No?
I'm not right.
Oh, sorry.
Further.
Okay, we've got a song.
It's biblical.
This is from the Low album, if I remember rightly. I'm looking for confirmation. Well, that last joke. I won't even get baptism.
this is, at least they don't have to slap you, though.
Yes. This is called Always Crashing in the Same Car. So I've just proved.
David, how did you meet Reeves? Was it Tin Machine back a while ago?
He followed me home after a gig one night.
He did?
Yeah, I couldn't get rid of him. He
plays pretty good guitar for a guy that followed you home.
What happened actually is on the 87 tour,
right. 10 years ago.
Reeves' wife Sarah stepped in as tour PR as somebody had dropped out, and she kindly came in and oversaw that. And he started sort of coming to the shows.
Hanging around.
And after the tour was over, I didn't quite know what Reeves did.
That's not an unusual question for one.
Well, I still don't.
Yeah.
You can ask people on the way out of the gig.
But he wears a guitar while he doesn't do it.
Yeah.
After the tour, Sarah said, you know, would you maybe listen to this? It's what my husband does. And I put it on, and I look great in it. And I said, well, okay, this looks wonderful, I'll try him out. And so it sounded great, the tape that she gave me of his guitar work.
Well,
and we just started working together.
I've seen you a number of times with Reeves last at the Avalon, was it? About one year ago this month, I think. And it was just...
I think actually, funnily enough, and it causes me great amusement, he's the guitarist that's actually worked with me longer than any other guitar player.
Is that right?
A full 10 years now.
Congratulations, Reeves.
And it does seem a day too much.
And geographically, we're so proud of him.
All sympathy cards can be sent to P.O. Box.
We're so proud of him because he's a Boston guy.
There is pride in the city.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's about all we have going.
I landed on one foot.
Yeah. No, and we always think of Reeves as a local guy. He had many bands around here, many projects. Right? And now he's like David Bowie's guitar player, man. I loved when you played with
That's an order.
Yeah. I loved 2 years ago when you played with Nine Inch Nails at Great Woods, and they went on first, and you guys sort of... Was that a segue that happened on stage where it was one band sort of blended into another?
That's called a segue, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, or a collision.
A collision?
Yes.
As it were, because all of a sudden it just dissolved from Nine Inch Nails into Reeves Gabrel and David Bowie. Is that what happened?
Collision by collusion.
I see.
If I remember correctly, that night while we were having the segue, Trent emptied a full 2-liter bottle of Evian down the back of my pants.
That's wow. Right. How wet.
for another hour and a half, yes.
Were you playing electric guitar, as it were?
Well, he was hopeful.
Oh, I see. He was trying to remove you from the scene. Well, there you go.
Oh, he was a practical joke imp, wasn't he?
Well, I did start it, but I won't explain that one.
Uh-huh. So it could have been disastrous, but it wasn't.
He's actually been a really stand-up guy. He's done a wonderful mix for us for the next single, I'm Afraid of Americans.
I was reading that you wrote that. I read this on the internet, so it may or may not be true. You were in the country of Java, and there was a new McDonald's going up.
Yeah.
And your reaction to a McDonald's going up in this tropical beauty was...
A homogenous, flattened culture always sort of leaves me cold at the best of times. And unfortunately, America is just the best graphic image to describe it.
And McDonald's
it shouldn't be so big, you see.
Quintessential American,
kind of
right?
An easy target. And so essentially, it was kind of, it really sort of berates the dumbing down process, which is also a cop-out phrase, I'm afraid, but I...
Yeah, so that's where I'm afraid of Americans. Times,
you couldn't draw any comparisons to the sun never setting on the British Empire.
Oh, yeah.
imperialism is purely a cultural or otherwise.
It may be Twilight.
It's purely an American thing.
That was unsubstantiated.
That's right. Those guys started it. We had to come here to get away from them.
It's never been proved.
Right. Yeah. Gee,
it's
so
never
that's
proved that we were an imperial real power.
You couldn't prove it now.
We just had the jackets.
So I'm afraid of Americans is more the corporate Americans than the social, you know, us guys sitting here enjoying your music.
I'm not sure about that. There's some cyber. Well, let me be positive. You see, the record is negative, so I think I should probably play devil's advocate. The things I think that the rest of the world admires so much about America are generally the things that corporate and establishment America regard as renegade or offbeat or outside. Uh-huh. Things like Jack Kerouac and the rebellious side of America, the great beatnik writings, the blues, all the things that don't fit into the structure of an establishment America. And unfortunately, that's the way life is.
I was listening to a public radio today. Kurt Vonnegut was on. He's 75 years old now.
Yes.
Today
his last book, isn't it?
Right. Time Quake, it's called. It gets released today. And he's saying it's his last book. And when the commentator...
It's published in my day.
Pardon me?
They release books?
Oh, published, yeah. Hey. You British have the right word for everything. It's unbelievable.
A word for everything, not necessarily the right one.
So he was asked, you know, why this would be his last book, and he says, "I've finished my mission. I've done what I felt as though I was sent here to do." He goes, "I checked it when I was 25. I checked it when I was 50. I checked it when I was 60."
Yeah.
And he goes, "When I was writing this book, it wasn't coming out right, and it was." And finally, it was like when I wrote the last chapter, I realized this was it. This was the final statement, and that I had done what I was set out to do. My body of work was complete. And I thought, wow, that must be a funny point when you get to that point in your life and you realize, I'm done. This is it. I was here to...
That denotes a kind of a character of immense modesty, I think. I mean, it's really... I can't possibly... I mean, I'll paint myself into a corner and say there are several artists and writers that really should have stopped a long time ago. Yes, Bowie.
Did you feel that way when you were 50?
Dreadfully cruel, I would say... again, somebody who just died the other day was Liechtenstein.
Uh-huh.
I think probably he reached a point quite early on in his career where he really needn't have continued painting, because he had the one template, which was to reduce everything to the cold cartoon kind of blueprint. I think there does come a point where if you're not going to expand on what you've been doing, or hone it and finesse it, or take it somewhere, there's no point in just duplicating it forever after, other than just for financial gain.
Brahms, you know, said when he was 55.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was always telling Brahms that.
That's it. Brahms, that's
like,
it.
Yeah, I'm done. You get away with murder.
That Brahms.
And he'd come out, he'd be knocking on my door every night about 11. I said, oh, who's that? He said, Brahms, I've written another one. Oh, no. Wait him in the morning.
I've been
Get back on the bus.
I've been waiting for Peter Cook to show up.
But you keep redefining...
Better Peter Cook than Sam Kennison.
Sam Kennison, no, there's a guy.
I can't yell, you see.
Yeah. He's been here. He's dead.
Really, was he here?
Oh, many times.
Did you have a bobcat?
Last time...
they remember having bobcat.
Last time bobcat was here, it didn't go well.
No,
I remember.
He went talking buddies. Bobcat I like a lot.
All right.
So.
He went storming out over something. I was like, okay, bye-bye.
He's actually a great guy.
Okay. I'm going to take your word for that.
Don't you mean a great bunch of guys?
We brought up
a great bunch of guys. But clear the room of furniture, because
we brought up his clown movie and it didn't go well. I don't know what happened.
Oh,
But Sam used to be here all the time.
The mines.
Yeah.
Oh. It's wonderful. Clowns kill mines. Oh,
yeah.
What a wonderful idea.
How did you get involved with Trent Reznor, and what's that like working with him? I dig his music a lot, and I'm intrigued by his sense, you know, and looking forward to his next music.
He's extremely passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
He's very serious about it as well. I think he's actually quite brilliant. I think that he'll survive these early years and will eventually emerge as one of the new crop of better musician composers in America. I would say that the guy has longevity. He's got legs. He'll work. Mm-hmm.
I really really loved the Outside album, and I thought, Bowie's back. This is great. This is the best album. There were so many great songs on that, and I thought, this is it. This is good. He's going to be back on the radio big time. And you know, I was a little disappointed in the fact that radio didn't embrace it the way I thought radio should have embraced it. So my question to you is, has radio let you down? Has radio changed since the 70s, the 80s, the
90s? I don't know about that, because I still have a really fulfilling, exciting career. In as much as that I play and do very much what I want to do,
mm-hmm.
I really like the work that I've been doing through the 90s. And for me, I couldn't really ask for much more. The fact that we still have audiences all over the world that will come and see us, the fact that I have a very loyal, steady audience that always buy the whatever new things that I'm doing, I feel privileged and very happy to be in the position that I'm in.
So, radio, whether it plays it or not...
I had radio play, it would be a bonus.
Yeah.
But it's not integral to the way that I work.
You certainly don't write them to say, this radio's going to love this.
No.
This will be the single. This will be the one.
No, I can't do that. I'm hopeless. Absolutely hopeless with singles.
Yeah.
I understand making albums, but I don't understand making singles.
Has there ever been a song that surprised you that was one of your songs that was a hit?
Fame. I never understood why.
Did you write that with John Lennon?
Yeah.
And it became, a huge hit. Number one in the country.
It's an okay R&B kind of thing, you know.
Was there ever one that you thought should have been a hit?
I just don't know what people buy singles anyway. Right. So, I mean, I can't. Hey, that should have been a single. Right. I think what it was, it was all on its own. Don't worry about it. It's single, it's independent, it's unattached.
Right,
it lives in a corner, in a box. It is a single.
Well, it goes back to the 45 spindle, which of course is, you know, people out there now
well,
don't even know what
it's
that is.
Recently that I realized that they actually are on CD these days.
That's right. That's right, that's right.
I've still been putting them with a big hole in them.
Right. See, there, that might be
to have had a detrimental effect on sales.
And if you put something on the other side, that's not going to work either. That's the B-side's not going to work.
Well, Brian Eno one night said, I don't understand why CDs aren't two-sided. I said, well, because God would have made them two-sided, wouldn't he, Brian? And he stuck two together and put them in the CD player, and it worked fine.
So Brian Eno's God, is that what you
Well, I thought Brian...
You're
joking there somewhere. He went there.
We've all enjoyed Brian Eno's work.
I don't know, but he thinks he's God. Isn't that a heaven
joke? Yeah. Wow. Well, this sure is fun.
So I ask this right now. Why aren't CDs two-sided?
And how come they never got cheaper?
We'll just leave that out.
We'll just hang I remember when they first came out, the record company said, well, they're going to be expensive for a while until the demand catches up with the supply. And as soon as that happens, well, those babies are just going to be $3-4.
That.
Remember that?
No,
that wasn't that the
that.
Promise? And the other promise was, these things are indestructible. You can put these in the dishwasher. You can walk on these, and they'll... Remember, that was the front cell. These are much better than records. They'll never disintegrate. Yeah, sure.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, there's an interesting story. I'm sure you know this story. Alan Klein, the late...
Comedian.
Comedian and rock group manager in the 60s. He went into one of the majors with a vinyl album, and he said, in this contract it says that you're taking 10% for broken and damaged product. I want that 10% back. And I said, no, but you know, it says here, right here, because of the broken and damaged albums. So I gave this to the managing director. He said, break that. Of course, it's a vinyl, flexible kind of album.
Right.
And the guy couldn't do it. And he said, okay, I want the 10% back. He got it.
That's what
they had. Changed the industry code for damaged product.
So it was the Dynaflex record, as it were?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah. Now, I remember then when they started making 78s out of that stuff briefly.
Right.
In England, was a very big deal.
Well, and I'm sure there'll be something else that'll replace the CDs too, which means everybody will have to go out and rebuy all their old albums, you know, like all your old Beatle albums. You had to rebuy them on CD, and then you'll have to go out and get them on...
It'll be tablet form, I'm sure.
Tablet form, exactly. Or just a little chip put into your brain.
Just swallow the new Beck. But you do, I mean...
the new Beck. I just got that.
But you know, it's the context of music has changed so rapidly and so irrevocably over the last few years. I mean, it's almost now that designers are so closely involved with music. It's now about, have you heard the new Klein?
Uh-huh.
You know, and you're talking about a CD that he's sort of behind and putting out on his fashion shows. You know, it's going to almost get to a point where you're going to talk about hearing the
name endorsements and things like that. And on outside,
it's interesting the way that the fragmentation is coming down.
On outside, you use so many different rhythms new rhythms that I had never heard you use before.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I somewhere along the line heard the word jungle beats referred to.
That's right. It really, those were our sort of early steps into jungle at that particular time.
Yeah,
I found it a very exciting new notion of percussion, and because of it, I got more drawn into the dance vocabulary. Not so much the dance music itself, because I'm primarily interested in melodic form and quite reactionary, really, in that way. But I really like the percussive elements in dance, and I wanted to, in some way, amalgamate those or hybrid them with live, aggressive rock.
Right.
And that's basically what turned into Earthling. So Earthling was really sort of, our manifesto about where the ceiling of dance could be broken, how it could become more accessible in a way, in terms of its melodic drive, as much as its very exciting dynamics, percussive dynamics.
For a long time, it seemed like there was the disco or dance world, and then there was the rock guitar-driven world, and never the two shall. You know, disco sucks, and everybody sort of like put themselves on one side or other. And that line seems to be blurred now, it's completely. But and you and you're one of the ones blurred.
I see over here in America. But, again, it's about context. In Europe, you have a very supportive system of raves and a dance nation. Every nation has a sub-dance nation within it in a major, major way, like nothing you've seen over here in the States. And it's going to be very hard for a lot of the so-called dance bands or new music bands or whatever you want to call them to actually make headway in the States without that very supportive network, because if they're in front of the wrong audience or in the wrong context, it doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to have the support system of its audience.
Yeah, in England there seems to be a whole tribal thing that goes along with the cyber thing,
and
they go and they rave out, space out, and it's great fun.
The emphasis these days on those kinds of events is primarily the focus is on the audience. The audience make the event very much so, like nothing we've ever seen before. The performers are not necessarily secondary to the event, but they are merely a part of it. And the focus is very much on the community aspect of what the rave is about. So it's a different thing from the going along to get the information from the artist. These days, the audience carry the information, and it's almost as though the artist merely choreographs that information.
And Trent seems to understand this within your music.
He's an anomaly, really, in American music in that way. Although there is because of the certain baroque qualities of what is implied in the neo-romanticism of his lyrics, the kind of the Baudelaire effect of Young Suicide and all that. I think he actually touches on a certain juvenilia. You know, there's a kind of a particular romanticizing of death that's very important to, it's almost a rite of passage for young people. We all go through get the old razor blade out, you know, have a quick go.
Yeah, I think I'm going to do it in today.
You'll become a hero.
One of the things that Trent, it's industrial, you know,
right?
I think we're actually more the electronica, to use the current, you know, that's, and then a few things we've worked with Trent, that's been sort of the marriage of the two things, you know. And I think that, to go back to the thing about guitar, because that's my concern, not being in...
You might just cut out.
I'm sorry.
No, it sounds fine on the air, though.
That was one of the things we wanted to try, because guitar was not in dance music.
Yeah, right.
And with Earthling, the idea was to reinvent it and give it life in that genre. And then after that, U2's thing came out, and then even the other band that's probably closest to what we're
trying to say is that we were first.
Is Apollo. Well, and also what I'm pointing out is Apollo, an English band, Apollo 440, is probably the only band that's actually doing what we were doing, and they came along as well after the fact. But not to mark territory too clearly, but we also did this other thing this summer where we played Dance Tents. We have a version of our show that is some of the same songs redone for purely for dance, and we brought it in there with, I think, great success.
Mm. Which I think with the aid of what I've just been given today, we'll be able to do successfully at one of these two shows. I think we should try some of that stuff.
What do you mean? The special
basic hardcore stuff. That
is this going back to the tablet form music?
Let me just say this.
tablet form experience.
Let me just say this. You're listening to WBCN Boston. David Bowie and Reeves Gabrella here. I'm Mark Pareto, and that's that. I had to sort of legally get that in because,
absolutely. You know.
And we could have done that for you.
And unlike
and
Kurt Vonnegut.
It's called Album on Virgin.
Yeah. And unlike Kurt Vonnegut, your body of work isn't done yet. We're clearly proving that there's much to go from David Bowie and friends, and perhaps it's time for another song.
Is that like shut the fuck up?
That's radio guy talk for that, basically.
why
ought to?
Don't make me come over there, Reeves.
say, what is this?
Okay. Get down from
this
there.
Is, this is a very early song. This was written, I think, in 1968. It's almost 30 years old.
Ooh.
And it was a glorification of the idea of Übermensch, which goes hand in hand with Young Suicide. I mean, this, you know, this song does cover both areas quite well.
Country and Western?
It just occurred to me.
Okay.
Country and Western, yeah. It's called The Supermen. When all the world was very young, clouds and magic heavy hung, the supermen would walk in file, guardians of a loveless isle, gloomy browed with super fear, their tragic endless lives would heave no sigh. Colossal serenity, wondrous beings chained to life. Strange games they would play then. No death for the perfect men. Life rose into one for them. So softly a super god. And unique thoughts, powers with by mystics taught, no pain, no power, no joy to grace, colossal strength to grasp a fate, where sad-eyed mermen tossed in slumbers, nightmare dreams no mortal mind could hold, man would tear his brother's flesh, a chance to die, to turn to mold. Red skies, far out from the sad eyes, strange mad celebrations, so softly a super god.
We didn't
there you have it. Very yes. Strong men dying.
Yes.
You know, it's all there in the one piece.
Superman.
Mm.
Do you ever get the urge to go on tour and get out,
yes.
get the Ziggy Stardust regale out, and you know, maybe the Diamond Dogs collars and
actually,
chains?
What
and
I do, Mark, when the show's over, we go back to the coach, and I've got it all in a big cardboard box under my bunk.
That's, you put it all out for Halloween.
Just to keep the rest of the band amused, I put on a red wig, you know, a feather boa, Liz Welsh, and I phone up major box office stars and pile them up on my bed and live the decadent life for about 10 minutes before the driver gets on board.
Yes. So like Sunset Boulevard.
Yeah.
Well, it's great fun to have you here today, David. And
it's been great being here.
Yes, and you got now the show tonight and the show tomorrow night, and then tomorrow night's the Cybercast.
Yes, it is.
Right, worldwide.
Yes, and we have props. Tonight we have props.
See?
Yeah. and why don't you put that on right now for the folks at home?
Yeah.
I think we'll save that for this evening,
okay.
Reece.
Yes. David has a mask in his hand.
David, there he is, the chameleon of rock. He's really done it now. Look what he's turning into. That must have cost him a fortune.
Yeah,
his surgical appendages.
What's your take on when people do a cover song, a Bowie cover song, like when Nirvana did Man Who Sold the World?
I was absolutely knocked out with that.
Yeah.
That one was...
sort of introduced your song to a whole new generation of people.
It was totally unexpected. I was in England at the time when it was when we first got it over there, and the first time I knew about it was when I saw it on the TV show. And I just called the whole family and said, "Hey, that's my song."
Yeah.
Wow, good. I wonder if they know that. Of course they did.
Of course they did.
There have been a couple by other bands that I've not been quite so happy about.
Yeah. Out of the current crop of English, young English bands, there seems to be a whole bunch of them. What are your, any faves?
I have to say probably you like...
Placebo.
You like Placebo? Well, Placebo are one of the better guitar bands, Placebo. Do you still like Radiohead?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
Underworld is still a big favorite.
And Underworld is a big favorite with him. I like Fotech, who are a drum and bass group. I like Prodigy. I liked Jilted Generation much better than the new album. I thought the new album was a letdown, frankly. I like Chemical Brothers, some of their work. I'm not so keen on most of the guitar bands. I find it irritatingly retro, in a way, a lot of it.
And Oasis, very Beatles-esque.
It's not on my turntable 24 hours a day, no.
Have you heard the Rolling Stones with the Dust Brothers? They have a new album out. No. It's very interesting.
You've been really busy.
Yeah, that's right. You guys have been touring now for the last 10 years, since or more.
Well, touring is like dog years, you know.
Is that right? Seven days?
Yeah.
And
wow.
We have the memories of Goldfish, which makes the whole thing. You know, it's a three-second memory.
Wow.
What?
It's a three-second memory.
What?
It's a three-second memory. So we...
There's an echo in here. That's Uncle Fuzzy on guitar.
Oh, stop that.
I'm sorry.
Bill Desmond is a dead man.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Can we get you to do one more song? Wouldn't that be great? Round things out.
You want to do that?
I'd love to.
All right, great. Good.
Only because I get to hit this thing harder.
Yeah.
This is an absurdity.
Okay.
Is that, am I thinking of the right thing?
Well, let's find out.
All right.
I'll start. It's been 10 years. You should be able to read my mind by now.
The only way that we thought, well, how do you do the harder stuff, maybe, acoustically? And we thought, well, there is only one way, and that's country and...
Western.
So our country,
what would Johnny do?
What would Johnny do, we thought?
I mean, after Frank Sinatra slept with Nancy Reagan, you really couldn't go, "What would Frank do anymore?"
Did she really? I never knew that.
I mean, that...
Really?
What? Tell us more.
Well, I got it from Kitty Kelly.
So did everybody, Reeves. So did everybody.
Running scared. stay in the stolen room. She asked for my love and I gave her a dangerous mind. Now she's stupid in the streets and she can't socialize. But I love the little girl and I love her till the day she dies. It was Jimmy's guitar sound, jealousy scream, waiting at the lights, know what I mean. Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running, running scared. Scary monsters, super creeps, keeps me running, running scared.
That sounds great. Thank you very much. An old favorite, Scary Monsters, as we enter the Halloween period here of October.
Right.
Oh, every day's Halloween.
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much,
Mark,
for coming by WBCN.
Thanks, everyone,
today.
For
thank you. A nice round of applause. David Bowie and Reeves Gabrel. Have a nice day in Boston, and thanks again.
Thanks a lot.
We'll be right back.
We're back in the studio. My first guest tonight is a music legend, and his latest critically acclaimed CD is entitled Earthlings. We are thrilled to welcome David Bowie. So that was epic.
The drive was epic. Everybody in the outside world out there, they crash real tight to the monitor, and I push my way through, and there's this, like,
just trying to watch this
thing.
Little strange journey we took.
Yeah, and thanks, Max, for the rebel thing. My pleasure.
You get a royalty on that, too.
Yeah, you work with Springsteen, right?
Yes.
Yeah, my drummer also, Zachary, was also with Springsteen, not at the same time as you.
That's right. And he did wonderfully. Yeah.
There was a drummer in the Wings to replace Max if anything went wrong.
I wondered who that guy was.
He's just sitting there.
He comes along hopefully every week. Yeah.
You have the coolest hair in rock and roll.
Thank you very much.
I have to say that right now. Does he not? Doesn't he have the...
He doesn't think so, the guy there.
What? There's one guy in there? No, he thinks he can do a little better.
It's because he has no hair.
He's looking for his moose right now. First of all, congratulations.
I beg your pardon?
Yeah. Congratulations. The birthday concert. I want to talk about this. Your 50th birthday.
Yeah.
Most people get a cake, you know, and a dreary party.
Yeah.
You have a Madison Square Garden super concert that's on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
This is when you know you've made it, when your birthday is on is a pay-per-view event. That's the sign that you've actually accomplished something.
The garden thing meant a lot to me in a way, because when my first trip to America in 71, I flew over especially to see the comeback show of Elvis, and it was on at the garden, so we share the same birthday. So I always
You and Elvis have the same birthday?
Yeah, we were drinking buddies way back. I used to fly over to Memphis, and we'd go out for the night on the Raz.
Uh-huh.
Big Cadillac. Big Cadillac.
Is there any truth to any of this? No.
I was told that was true.
I just had to ask.
I've read it.
It's such a cool image.
He sent me a telegram once.
Uh-huh. Okay. I understand. You know, now I'd believe nothing. In fact, you're not David Bowie. Hair comes right off.
Everything you know is not rehearsed. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, one of the things you've done that's so amazing when you think you've reached this point in your career, you've managed to stay relevant in music, and it's probably through all the different transformations you've made.
Well,
the different characters that you've portrayed.
A few years ago, I joined Relevance Anonymous. We'd just sit and share our ideas, and everybody else would network and give us feedback and suggestions of how we keep relevant.
Who didn't get into Relevance Anonymous? Anybody?
I'm going to stop right there.
Yeah. I want this to get real mean,
yeah,
real fast.
No, no.
I want to actually just take a brief walk down memory lane. But first of all, just to look at some of the different characters. Liz, put these up, because it's good to refresh everybody's memory. Of course, there was the young David. This is early on. Then there was Ziggy Stardust, of course. Then there was the Thin White Duke, of course, my personal favorite. And then there was a period there where you were trying personas.
No, don't do this to me.
No. Yeah. I don't remember if other people remember this. We reviewed this once on the show, but you were trying different personas that I don't think quite had the commercial appeal. There was the suave hunchback.
Yeah.
Do you remember this at all?
Ernie Stardust.
Yeah. There was the Bucktooth Wizard. I remember he was... And then this is strange, your corn on the cob period, I found confusing. I don't know, wait. Yeah, it was your favorite, the corn on the cob.
Yes, yeah, that was very
You're free to use any of these, by the way, if you want.
Thank you very much.
I don't know if this is true, but I love finding these things out.
That
you actually, when you were just starting out, you started in a mime troupe.
Yeah, we worked in a mime troupe. There were several mime troupes in Britain, and it turned into a kind of a war between mime troupes. The mime wars of 1968.
Uh-huh.
You remember those Paris things, the Paris riots? That wasn't actually a student socialist thing. It was the mime wars of Paris.
Uh-huh.
And it was all these, the mimes were after Jean Genet, so that they could do the first version of The Maids.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, are you going to let me go with this?
Yeah! I'm going to let you go and go.
So they run around hitting each other.
We're going to put a...
Priya pricks.
Uh-huh. Oh, wait, slow down.
Throttling each other in silence.
Now, were you actually in a mime troupe? Did you do the thing in the box? You never did the thing in the box.
I did the thing in the box.
Oh, get out of here.
I did that.
We're going to ask you to leave now.
You don't want me to do the thing in the box?
Do the thing
in the box.
Yes.
I've forgotten it.
You forgot it.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, that was pretty good. Yeah. But you have to make this face. Whoop.
Yeah.
That thing
no,
is...
No, I don't.
Yes. Yes, you legally do. Or you're in a lot of trouble. You did. There was a piece on the pay-per-view show that was quite visually interesting. The scary monsters thing. This was with.
Yeah.
What was it? Is that puppets?
There's a media artist in America that I like very much called Tony Ausler. It's interesting that in the 60s, all the painters and all the artists were really well known, like Andy Warhol, and I guess in the 80s it was Jeff Koons and Julian Schnabel. But right now, it's almost impossible to think of a current artist who's a household name in quite the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an aside, really, Conan.
We had a clip here. Do you want to explain do you want to show this clip here, Liz? I don't know if this needs setting up, but it's visually...
Well, just look at it.
Okay, look at it. That's disturbing.
That was another persona.
That's going to be your next persona, is that what you said? A head getting stepped on.
Yeah, we're just going to get one of Tony's models to actually do the vocals, and I'll be underneath on the floor.
And the whole thing will work out.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you, there was something that they were playing here in America on MTV Round the Clock for a while, and it was something I've always wondered about, you singing Christmas songs with Bing Crosby.
Yeah.
And this is something that I guess you probably did in 76, sometime around then. What was that like? Because it's such a strange thing to look at. You're almost polar opposites in some way, and there you are together singing these Christmas songs. Do you remember doing this and what it was like?
I remember doing it. The communication factor was very strange. If I had more communication in a way with Tony Ausler's dummies.
Mm-hmm.
But it was that he didn't know who I was. He couldn't remember my name.
Mm-hmm.
And he just sat on the stool the whole day. And
How were you brought into him? So it wasn't him saying, I love this whole Ziggy Stardust thing. I want to meet this guy.
Yeah, he just loved the Heroes period. Yeah.
It was very influential on Bing.
He's a very big, he tried for months to get Eno to work with him on his next... on his next album.
I would love to find those recordings. I hope you can hang on for one second, because we've run short on time for this one. We're going to take a break. We'll have more with David Bowie in just a second. So stick around. everybody. I'm here with David Bowie. And now, David, you're going to come back later in the program and perform for us. But right now, I'm told that you've never done an acoustic song on American television.
First time, no.
You're going to do one for us.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely. It's a song called Dead Man Walking from the Earth Wing album.
Mm-hmm. Good.
There's a real interesting story attached to this, Conan. Would you like to hear it?
No, I wouldn't. Bye, everybody. Yeah.
So, 30 years ago, about 30 years ago, I was in the studio with one of the thousands of bands that I had in the 60s, and Jimmy Page was a session man on the session. And he said, David, I said, Jimmy. He said, David,
two Cockney chimney sweeps?
Yeah, I said, I've got this old riff that I'm not using anymore. Would you like it? And I said, thank you very much. So he gave me a riff, which if I had a guitar here...
Why, there's one right here.
Oh, that's great.
Andy, can we use your guitar?
Sure. Well, put this back then.
I just use it to level the table.
You wait till you hear me. And so the riff was this. And I put it into a song called The Supermen, which I'm not going to sing now.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few months ago, whilst we're in the studio, for some reason, it just my fingers just went straight there, a Conan, and I couldn't help myself, but I rewrote it.
That's okay, Governor.
Into this other song. I'll go and play for you now.
Well, if there were musicians, there is right there. I see. Okay.
There's Reese Gabrillas. I'll catch him quickly. When I sit, when I nod my head, hit it.
His head tears his eyes from the screen as his past puts him back in Atlantic City. There's not even a demon in heaven or hell. Is it all just human disguise as I walk down the aisle and I'm gone? Now I'm older than movies, and I know who's there when silhouettes fall. And I'm gone, like I'm dancing on angel. And I'm gone, through the cracks in the past, like a dead man walking. Like a dead man walking. Three old men dancing under the lamplight, shaking their sets and bones and the boys that we were. An alien nation in therapy, sliding naked and nude. Like a bad-tempered child on the rain-slicked streets. And I'm gone. Now I'm old in the movies. And I know who's there when silhouettes fall. And I'm gone. Like I'm dancing on angels. And I'm gone through the crack in the past, like a dead man walking. Like a dead man walking. Dead man. Dead man.
David's going to be back later in the show to perform, and Earthlings. Earthlings is at record stores everywhere, and the new single "Dead Man Walking" is out there, so make sure you get it. And Justine Bateman's coming right up. Yes,
I just moved.
You mind?
Sorry.
He's in the box. Everybody, we'll be
sorry,
right back.
I didn't mean to.
Go, baby, go. Back, ladies and gentlemen, and here he is once again, David Bowie.
Thank you very much. David Bowie, everybody. Take a break. We'll be right back.